This program is part of Full Service Radio, an internet radio station and podcast network with over 32 weekly shows broadcasting from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. All of our hosts are Washington, D.C. locals, covering stuff like music, arts, culture, identity, politics, and so much more. Visit fullserviceradio.org for all of our programming and enjoy the show. Full Service Radio is also proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Welcome to the DC Public Library Radio on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Victor, your host today. I'm a librarian at Shaw. I'm joined here by my co-host, Will Reed. Today's guests are Jeremy Gardner, an archivist, and also joined here today are Thaddeus Coates, an artist. First, before we begin talking about the changing nature of libraries, I'll pass it over to Will, who has a little history about today's date.
Yeah, so those of you that have listened before know that we love to talk about, you know, this day in history. So today is January 9th, and 11 years ago today, in 2007, Steve Jobs announced the iPhone at the Macworld convention, which, you know, the iPhone has changed just about everything in terms of everything, really. And so I've got this really interesting clip that I wanted us to play. It's from the 60s. It's about the home of the future, and it's what they envisioned the world would be like in 1999. So I've sort of cut little bits and pieces, and it's pretty amazing. I think they hit right on the head a lot of different things. Jack, could you cue that up for us?
At that time, he stored the two photographic images in the central home computer, which is secretary, librarian, banker, teacher, medical technician, bridge partner, and all-around servant in this house of tomorrow. All pertinent information about this family, its records, its tastes, and reference material, is stored in these memory banks, available instantly to every member of the family. Fingertip shopping will be one of the many homemaker's conveniences. This video console will be channeled into the store of her choice. There, a camera will scan a display of wares, which she will select by push button. What the wife selects on her console will be paid for by the husband at his counterpart console. All bills and transactions will be carried out electronically. A central bank computer will debit the family's account the amount of purchases and credit the department store, for example, informing the family's home computer at the same time. Father, at the touch of a button, receives an instantaneous printed copy of his budget, the amount of taxes he owes, the payments left on the car, and so forth. All documents and household records are available on the video screen for immediate reference. Also at his disposal is an electronic correspondence machine, or home post office, which allows for instant written communication between individuals anywhere in the world.
Wow, so, that was really interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like,
I mean, they're basically describing what we have now in their smartphone.
Definitely. It's a really, I don't know. There are pros and cons for sure. But I think it's definitely impacting the way you and I work at the library. I suspect that technology and everything are impacting the work that Jeremy does at the Smithsonian. And by the way, Jeremy's also a volunteer archivist at the Punk Archive, and that's something we'll talk about a little later. I'm suspecting it changes Thaddeus's creative work as well, but I don't want to assume too much. I'd love to learn, like, take a minute to, you know, let our guests sort of tell us a little bit about who they are and what they do and that sort of thing. Who should we start with?
Jeremy, would you like to start?
Sure, yeah. So my name is Jeremy Gardner, and I work at Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian. And I work with the archives team as the digital archivist. And so, yeah, my particular job, actually a bulk of what I'm doing is actually making things from analog to digital. So, and you know, all this.
For those who may not understand what that means, what do you mean by analog to digital?
Oh, well, for example, creating a digitized item of a photograph or paper or basically that's what we sort of handle. It could be a little three-dimensional, but mostly paper and AV materials, that sort of thing. And in the process of digitizing, it's sort of a, for us it's twofold. It's a measure of preservation, and it's also a sort of means as to get these materials to the people who need them in a much more easier fashion.
That's actually really interesting, because I mean that's exactly how I got a hold of that, you know, clip we just listened to. I got it from archive.org, which I think a lot of archivists upload things up to it. And you know, I personally don't like to go and look for things mm-hmm. in the real world. Right. If it's not online, for me, it doesn't exist. I don't know if
it's not really online, it doesn't exist. Well, something I've discovered is that it's much harder to preserve and keep things that are digital. In working in archives, and I've realized that things that are in paper, things that are photographs, are much easier to preserve and to hold on to. Like, even myself, like, the photos I had of my college years, I've lost because I lost that hard drive. Yet I still have, like, my photos as a kid growing up. I can go home and find a shoebox mm-hmm. full of photos and videos and things like that.
Yeah, it's sort of, it relates to this this sort of growing part of our life, is that we are continuing to collect and build these personal archives mm-hmm. and how do we manage that? So we have, you know, phones and computers with digital items, and the way in which we, you know, do something with them or not is one of the challenges that a lot of people face. And then sometimes you lose them and then they're gone.
Right. Yeah.
And so we, you know, as a museum or any sort of, you know, more professional archive, you would definitely, you would want both, of course, but.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're also joined here by Thaddeus Coates, someone who we met at the library. Mm-hmm. Thaddeus Coates has been coming to the library to use Digital Commons. And in all honesty, when you started coming in, you were just a regular customer. At one point, I think you were showing one of my coworkers your Instagram, and through social media, I was able to get to know you a little better through this technology. But Thaddeus, what else do you want to tell us about yourself?
Yes, well, I'm Thaddeus Coates. I'm an artist. So I used to go to the library at the Digital Commons and use their digital software that they have there. So I guess digitally, well, technology has created a different category for artists, and I consider myself a traditional artist, but a digital artist as well. So because technology is advancing and growing, you know, the fields have to grow too. So it's actually, you'd be more of an asset than a hindrance if you knew how to, you know, navigate technology. So I navigate the Adobe suite, and that's where I primarily do my art. I'm also a traditionally trained artist, but I could, like, get down digitally too.
Yeah. No, and I'm sure even just being so connected to social media has brought, like, opportunities, connections. Like, I don't, being an artist now, I think it would be impossible to just kind of throw technology away and not be present in social media. I think you wouldn't be successful. I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Well, that's interesting because I'm not really sure. Because think about it, if Michelangelo had like an Instagram and he was like Instagramming his sculptures mm-hmm. and stuff.
Oh, that is so weird.
Or like if Da Vinci was like Instagramming like or like live feeding how he, you know, came up with the Vitruvian Man. Like, I don't know. I'm not really sure. I feel like without technology, you were able to appreciate an artist more. But I feel like technology also puts pressure on artists in general, so it has a different effect on the creative process. Because sometimes artists are coerced, like to put out things, you know, constantly. Because in the realm of social media, time is something that's sort of kind of like melting. Mm-hmm. It's all into one, so there's no, like, you have to like be on top of it or you'll like fall into like the need
right.
of, you know,
you have to be in a way maybe be about what's happening now in the moment on yes. social media.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I get that. Yeah,
definitely.
That is so stressful.
Yeah, so I guess on today's episode we're talking about how libraries and archives are being yeah. used in so many different ways. I think as a librarian, for me, one of the frustrating things that I experience is people coming to a reference desk and complaining, oh, like, why do you guys have a studio that makes so much loud noise? Why do you have all these activists over here working on this very specific agenda?
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating to me because I have to, in using very great customer service, I have to advocate a space for all these other sort of differences. And things that people find at the library that they weren't necessarily expecting to find and are surprised. I know, Jeremy, you've worked on the Punk Archive. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So I'm one of the volunteers that's sort of been there from the start. I work with Michelle Castro, who's a special collections librarian in the Washingtoniana And so, yeah, her and some other library colleagues basically got together and started putting together, an archive of, you know, DC's punk scene. And, the community came out and has donated lots of stuff. And so that's basically, yeah, what I work on about once a week.
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, the DC Library has been hosting punk shows
mm-hmm.
In the past. They've continued to host punk shows even after the closing of MLK Library
yeah.
since it's being modernized. But even for me, as someone who has been here in DC for 5-6 years, when I first moved here, I had the same perception as other people that DC was so uptight
mm-hmm.
that there's nothing but political and business people here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in all honesty, when I first moved here, I didn't know who to connect with. And when I started discovering that there really is a huge community of activists and punks and so many artists, like, it was refreshing to learn about that.
Yeah.
DC has a very strange dichotomy of cultures here. I mean, and it's not always so clear cut, but there's still this really warm and very, not just progressive, but radical community here
right.
and doing wonderful things.
So, you know, you have, I mean, I want to sort of preface what I'm about to say. Earlier you were talking about, you know, how we can lose things and, you know, if, you know, a hard drive fails, for example, we can lose all of, you know, Thaddeus could lose all of his work if he hasn't backed it up, for example. I hope you've backed it up.
Yes.
You have.
Yes.
It's such a librarian concern
yeah.
to get
yeah.
you to back up your stuff.
But, you know, you're pretty regularly volunteering your time to help preserve punk history. I think a lot of people would want to know why.
Yeah.
Why punk history? Why aren't you preserving something else? You know, Victor was talking about how patrons come into the library and they say, why are you using the library this way? I guess the broader question is, why does punk history
in an archive for like this history that some people, so many people like actively dislike punks and what they're about. So yeah. why is it worth to keep this history?
I would say, you know, there are a lot of histories that are worth saving. This just happens to be a particular one that a few individuals really, who were a part of that community in different ways, wanted to keep that. I will say we also are very much working towards a very specific and hopefully very populated go-go archive, mm-hmm. as well as a larger DC music sort of archive. I know there's been talk about the jazz scene in DC, mm. and I'm not sure if they're going to do folk, for example, but DC used to have quite a folk scene here, and it was
I didn't know that.
Very specific.
Neither did I.
So, but for the punk, you know, I think it's just sort of more emblematic of it's a subculture of, you know, it's an identity politic of, it's very, it can be very vague and very broad, but of people who are, you know, dissatisfied with the you know, the status quo. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they're just specifically interested in being a bit loud and rebellious. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why you might call yourself punk, and how that fits into what we're calling the DC Punk Archive.
On our way here, I was talking to Will about having attended some like punk parties, mm-hmm. and how really I was surprised to find how diverse this community is. Like, you find people of every sort of background, every sort of gender, and even non-conforming gender.
Yeah,
it was really refreshing to see that here in DC. Something that you just said is like something that goes against the status quo. Thaddeus, a lot of the work that you do, I think, is very much about identity politics, very much about mm-hmm. kind of resisting the narrative that people of color have had, resisting that status quo and kind of creating a new narrative. And when I saw that, like, I saw like the work that you were doing was much more than just like aesthetic in nature. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really refreshing to see from your work as well.
Mm-hmm. What's super cool about even the diversity in the DC scene is that even at the library, all of you guys are from different walks of life. And when I was creating my book and I like brought it to you guys were able to see that, you know?
Yeah. Like, I think even maybe one of us was the one, you should make a book out of this.
Yes, actually. I believe it was you, Portia, and Boomy, and you guys had all pushed me to make this a thing. Yeah. But as an artist, I feel like it's my responsibility to rewrite the narrative that has been created for people of color. Mm-hmm. And so through using my book, Shine, I'm able to sort of kind of put a light out, literally, pun intended, a light out in, you know, the world of what it means to be a person of color. Mm-hmm. More recently, something that has been in the news lately, there was a campaign for H&M, a horrible campaign for H&M. And it was basically like this little black boy. It was like three different children. There's this little black boy, and he has on like the sweatshirt that has like, I'm like the bravest monkey in the jungle, or something like that, the coolest monkey in the jungle. And it was like super, super racy. Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea. But even that, like, I recently had did a piece in which I like re-illustrated how that would look. Mm-hmm. And going back to technology, I don't think I'd be able to as quickly work as I'm able to work and diligently. I don't know, it's sort of kind of like, because you have to be on top of everything, I'm always like on my phone, like literally, I was on my phone. That could be a hindrance, but it also could be like an asset. Mm-hmm. So if I wasn't able to like look at my phone and see what was going on, and like many of my friends were sending this to me, so I was able to get it real time. Like everybody was texting me, I was like, are you like, have you seen this? A lot of my friends like try to like joke and say like, I'm like the most righteous. And I'm just like, no, I just care. You know, you should care too.
And for anyone who's interested in seeing Thaddeus's work, your Instagram handle, can you share?
My Instagram handle is Hippie Potter, H-I-P-P-Y-P-O-T-T-E-R. So like Harry Potter, but like hippie, but like super cool hippie, because I'm a super cool, super like big J.K. Rowling fan. Harry Potter is my favorite. Harry Potter is my favorite book.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the full title of your book is Shine, The Polarite Chronicles.
Yes.
And something, even like I'm looking at the cover right now, it's three young girls, all very empowered, strong, all persons of color, mm-hmm. in every sort of shade. You don't get to see this a lot.
Yeah, POD is actually an acronym. It's on the back of the book. POD is an acronym for People of Divine Dissension. Mm-hmm. So I like made a word out of that. So it's like Potterites. So yeah. It's also like a pun on my name because it's like Potter, Podder. Like I'm weird, but I'm glad everything worked out.
That's awesome. So let's get back maybe to some origin stories of like how we even got started, you as an archivist, Jeremy, you as an artist. Like, what led you to have this desire or maybe like just to become an archivist?
Yeah. Quickly figured out how I could become a librarian, which for many years I like wanted to be a librarian and then realized that it was something you could actually do, and then I figured out how to do it, and that sort of changed a lot of my life. And I ended up moving more towards working towards archiving, and then specifically doing a lot of like digital archiving, and just sort of where I'm at now. But I appreciate that, you know, I can be of some sort of used to, helping to preserve and to, you know, better help researchers get the information that they need. And then more specifically where I work, you know, we also have a lot of, we have a lot of different sort of constituents. So we have, tribal members, and we have researchers, and we have, just a number of other people who are wanting to use the archives. So, and yeah, for different reasons. So, yeah.
So your work is, really focused on, sorry, my brain is like floating away, but your work really empowers people of color. And then, your work, you work at the Smithsonian Museum of the Native American, which is about, minority group. I think this is really interesting, and maybe I'm just reaching for something and just kind of barely getting it with my limited brain power here today. But
In some ways, I guess the work that archivists do and artists do, there isn't like activist component.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. Like how if you're going in as I guess this is also pitched to you, Victor, as well, as a librarian or an archivist who is aware of past trauma and inequalities, how do you preserve history and focus your efforts in a way that respects that and is promoting, the world that we want to live in today, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Is that too broad of a question?
Like, how do you rewrite the history that has been told, that has been biased
exactly
against groups, that has, pinned people into specific sort of a place that is not always good or healthy?
Yeah. Well, because so much of the stuff that we have from the past is, explicitly racist.
Mm-hmm. And even I will admit that the motivation for me to become a librarian, I wouldn't have gotten there if it wasn't for my work as a community organizer back in Chicago, and seeing like my own privilege as a person of color and how people are living in neighborhoods that are so near to mine. And knowing that if only there was a little bit of like technology, a little bit of access to things, a space that is free and available to everyone, things would just be so much better for these communities. That's also how I ended up becoming a librarian.
Right.
And
right. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that general question I had? I know that was very...
Yeah, well, you know, it could be a really longer conversation because at our museum, you know, we're sort of seen as leaders in a number of ways, and one of these ways is basically what you're getting at. How can we be stewards the best that we can be and not be gatekeepers to information, to the objects that we have? How can we best use the objects that we have that were, somewhat often collected in a very not so good way? And moving forward, how can the museum basically be more than just a museum? How can it sort of be a more active member in the community of Native Americans? And as far as my sort of job and my purpose in the archives is, how do we best save and share these things that, allows people to create new, more, progressive narratives. And that's basically what the archivist's job is. Yeah. It's just sort of get things together, let researchers, writers, whomever make their own sort of opinions.
And so you've preserved it so that then creative people like Thaddeus can take it and create new works that generate, a new empowering narrative, which is fantastic.
Yeah, totally.
Thaddeus, do you want to tell us about how you became an artist? You said you had some, training, and tell us about that.
Well, in the first grade, my teacher, Mrs. Edwards, I went to Orr Elementary School. I was born and raised in D.C. The first assignment that we had was to, create, an image, and I created, this little boy. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't even know. It felt right. So I created, this boy and, this hill and, holding, this balloon, and, she got it printed on a plate. And so I took it to my mom, and mom said it was beautiful, of course. I thought it was like garbage. But from then, I sort of kind of had a knack for drawing things in general. That plate lasted so long. I had that plate for probably 9 years, and then my mom got chicken grease on it and had to throw it away. and then there was a bunch of programs. You were talking about how if there was a space where everything was inclusive, it would be more beneficial. So there was a space that I was able to go and create and that fueled me to create. And I was around all these wonderful people, adults who were nurturing me. So I was a part of this program called Martha's Table. Martha's Table has a team. They had a team program. It was amazing. It was ran by Timothy Jones and Selena Gonzalez Jones. And they had different workshops. They had graphic design workshops. They had fashion design workshops. They had different things, and you could sign up for the workshops, and it was through DOES for kids, the children's work program thing. Okay. So there I was, they were able to mold me in a sense, and I was able to try a bunch of different things to figure out what I was good at. Mm-hmm. And so that's where I first got the experience. I was working off of Adobe Elements. That's okay. That's not even the real software. It's baby Photoshop. But I was working off of there, and I had all these super cool opportunities, and I was able to do a banner for the Redskins, for Donovan McNabb, and through there I was able to figure out my craft. And then later on, I was able to find my own style and found out to find what works for me. Mm-hmm. When I was in sixth grade, I was really in love with Butch Hartman and the Fairly Odd Parents. And so I would during standardized tests, I would be drawing on the scrap sheets of paper when I was supposed to be doing my test. And so my teacher, Miss O'Brien, she's seen it and she was that's really good. There were all these little people that I believe God put in my life that were so supportive of me. Even now how I found you guys at the DC Public Library, it's everybody is so supportive and supporting me, and it makes me feel so good. I hope everybody has this kind
you
of
you were always system. A favorite patron of many people, I think. I don't know if we're allowed to have
favorite
patrons,
even when you were there,
but we did.
You would help us help people who were working on Photoshop and Illustrator.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, it's you became we relied on you sometimes to help other customers who, where we didn't have the enough advanced skills like you did to offer that help. But yeah, I remember seeing your work. Even other customers would gravitate around you and see and wanna and show interest in what you were doing. But yeah, so your book is a self-published book.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that? Because so many people try and self-publish. I mean, the library had a the Espresso book machine that offered customers the opportunity to self-publish. How was your approach about publishing when you went?
Okay, so my approach for self-publishing was like, I wanted it to be great quality. I go to FIT, and so like I have like an eye for like paper and like gloss and like prints and everything. So I wanted my work to be displayed like in the best possible format. And so when I presented my idea, like I did this other thing for FIT where it was like Dear World. And like I told my story about how like I created my book because I feel like representation matters. And I will always represent like my people in my artwork. So you can always count on me to empower my people through my artwork. And hopefully, even not exclusively to my people, everybody could be inspired because inspiration knows no color. It's just inspiration in general. So I told my story at Dear World on stage in front of like a whole bunch of people. And Dear World, they came to me at the end. The president of FIT was like, I want to help you publish your book. And so now I have like somebody else on board with me who wants to support my dream. And so I'm just like, wow, that's so cool. So the pressure was on for me because I wanted to publish it. But I was like, should I really publish this? Like, is everybody really going to like buy it? Who's going to read it? Like, but at the end of the day, if my art is out there and it's resonating with people, then I have to, you know, continue to push it out. And so from then, I partnered with Barnes & Noble's at FIT, and they helped me publish my book through Blurb. So the book is actually officially published with an ISBN through Blurb. And so the second run of books is self-published through the print house in Brooklyn. So there I got to talk to the guy, too. So it's like a bunch of like footwork and like, you know, steadfastness and like perseverance. But yeah, I'm super proud of how it came out. Everything is super great. And
it looks amazing.
Thank you.
And for those who may want to see the book and hear Thaddeus speak, Thaddeus will be speaking at the Shaw Library. And do you remember when?
January the 27th, 12 o'clock.
So
on Saturday.
On Saturday. So for those who are listening and want to see Thaddeus's work,
that's cool.
Please come to the Shaw
Library. Yes, come out and see me. I'd love to see you and talk to you and like, you know, we can just vibe out. But yeah, I'll be talking there too. And I'll also be showing my art too. I have other like pieces and works too. So yeah.
And I know that you're very much influenced also by pop culture.
Yes.
Can you talk to us about that?
Like what in general?
Well, I mean, just looking at your Instagram, I know that you have, for example, drawings of like Aaliyah or like like R&B and hip hop artists.
Of course. Hip hop culture is a big part of pop culture, which is heavily influenced by people of color. So I've done like everybody from like, I've illustrated like Biggie Smalls and I've done Aaliyah and I've done Beyonce and I've done Solange and I've done just people who have inspired me because music is such a big part of like what I'm like creating. And I'm always listening to something. And I'm always listening to something very heavily, like whether it's like a SoundCloud mix or like something that I've like, you know, just found and listened to.
Yeah.
So yeah, music, it's great.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Going back to our other guest here as well, we're kind of popping back and forth because we got two really interesting guests with great things to share. Jeremy, I know you have a long history of being involved with like activism here as well as, you know, you're doing the Punk Archive. Could you tell us, you were telling me that specifically within the Punk Archive, you've been, what was it that you were helping catalog specifically? It was...
Oh, yeah. So we have this, this is all sort of donated from different community members and people who lived here and whatnot. And one of the more sort of larger collections and more important collections is the Mark Anderson collection. And Mark Anderson is the individual who basically helped to start a positive force here in D.C. And they continue to do work here. And so we have the Positive Force archive, basically things that Mark was keeping for years and years and years. And then we have his personal archive and his materials for his book, Dance of Days, which is basically a record of the DC punk scene. And so, yeah, so that's what I work on a lot.
And so what is Positive Force, really? I hear people talk about it all the time, but I don't really know what it is.
Yeah, so I guess just really quickly, it's an organization. It actually started in Nevada by the band members of 7 Seconds, but then quickly sort of moved into a chapter in D.C. And basically what Positive Force does is they're sort of like an umbrella of activists who want to support other activists and their and help make them some money or give them some sort of spotlight in some way. So a lot of what Positive Force does is they help put on shows, and the money raised there goes to a specific organization that they are working with. And I think they do some other things. I'm not like totally integrated into Positive Force, which is kind of funny because I'm like constantly working on their archive and Mark Anderson's like personal stuff. And it's also Positive Force is also Mark Anderson also helped to create this organization called We Are Family, which collects food and delivers it to people all over the city, but specifically the elderly who are in need. And so when I first moved here, I did a number of those on the weekends.
So it's like a punk Meals on Wheels or something?
Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
Exactly, yeah. So,
so Jeremy, yeah. One of the questions that I've been asked in the past, and I'm not always sure how the answer is, what's the difference between an archive and a library?
Oh, that's a good one. It's really good because of the initial question that we had about how technology is changing things. Well, the role of the librarian is changing quite dramatically, right? So if I answer that question, let's say, basically, archivists work with materials that aren't published, whereas librarians work with mostly things that are published, and they're sort of stewards of how you get to find those things, whereas archivists are sort of deciding what to do with papers and photographs and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, when I've been asked, I've told people, and this is what a friend of mine told me who's a fellow librarian. He said that libraries are interested in preserving things and, well, in giving access to materials for right now when people need them.
Yeah.
Whereas archivists are interested in keeping things for the long-term access of these materials. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Your preservation is basically... That's what basically what we're doing, and then what I specifically do is digital preservation. So, yeah, that would be a good split between the two.
Well, I also think it was a question I'd kind of ask for you is we got to work and get to know Thaddeus really well because he'd come to the public library all the time and would be always working on these really amazing things, and it was always like a thrill to get to talk to him. And then I think about the work that you do, and I'm assuming you probably interact with academics from time to time, but, the whole experience is different because I don't know. I mean, do you have patrons?
I actually don't interact very much with anyone. we have an archivist who basically is a reference sort of archivist, and his particular job is to find materials that the researchers need and to sort through how do you find that. But Yeah, I specifically don't get to do that as much, and that's one of the things I miss about being a librarian is getting to do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, sometimes it's just nice not to have to do it.
Yeah, no, I totally understand. It's a mixed bag always.
So Thaddeus, I have a question for you. As a librarian, I sometimes come across people who think of themselves as creative people, who want to pursue their artistic kind of nature, but are maybe hesitant and don't know where to begin. Do you have any recommendations for maybe how to get started? Say that maybe you are kind of gifted and talented and can draw, but maybe don't have ideas about what to draw. Like, what would you say to a young person who is wanting to grow up to be an artist?
I would say find your voice. And then once you find your voice, you can find your narrative. Mm-hmm. And then once you find your narrative, then you'll find out what, like, you know, what resonates with you. Even if it's like pizza. Like, if I was like, if I can only draw pizza,
I'd be like, who doesn't love pizza, right?
Like, the best pizza artist ever. And if, like, pizza truly resonates with me, like, in my soul, it's, like, somehow connected to, like...
Does it not resonate with you?
To, like, the, like... depths of Italy, like my Italian roots, which I don't have any, but who knows, I possibly could. But like, whatever, like, you like, because, like, I know most kids, we like cartoons. Mm-hmm. So, like, draw your favorite cartoon, like, draw SpongeBob, draw, you know, just be diligent about your research, because I was obsessed with the Fairly Odd Parents, so I found out that, like, Butch Hartman went to, like, the University of Valencia for arts. So, like, I don't know, I have a knack for, like, you know, delving deeper. So I would say to find your voice. And then once you find your voice, find out what you want to say through your art.
That's great.
And once you're saying it with your heart, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And I think that really comes across with the characters that you create.
Yes.
And all these images and illustrations that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So we're getting close to the end of our episode. For those listening, to learn more about the library, just visit dclibrary.org. You can also find us on social media through DCPL. And I know, Will, you brought a clip from a punk show at the library.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if I would personally classify it as a punk show, okay. But we've got a clip from an alternative band called the Park Snakes. They're actually they did want us to go ahead and let everyone know that on Thursday they're having a show with no cover charge at the Dewdrop Inn in Brookland Eckington as well. So people can check that out. Should we go ahead and listen to some of that?
Yeah, well, until next time.
Yeah, and you know, thanks again to Jeremy and Thaddeus for coming on.
Thank you guys for coming
and
over.
Sharing their knowledge with us. Yeah.
All right, we can listen.
Sweet. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.